Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm.
Lunch with Norm.
So while we're broadcasting to you live on Facebook and YouTube, Kelsey, why don't you tell everybody what they're supposed to do?
All right. We got lots of stuff today to go over. But first, follow us on social media. So we are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok. Give us a follow. And if you're enjoying this content, just please like and share. It helps get the word out for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. So today's a very special day for us. So not only do we have an amazing guest, but because of all the positive feedback that we've received over the last little while, this is our first official podcast. So, yes. And the first official podcast, and I've got a cough. But anyways, we are officially launched, Lunch with Norm. You can find it on Apple or any of your podcast platforms. We just launched this morning, lunchwithnorm.com. So really would like to get your feedback on what you think of it. I think our graphic designers did a great job on it. So all of our past episodes will be there, as well as all of our new. So the description also will be in the comment field if you want to just check on it.
Yeah, I already put it in the comments. So if you're looking to download our podcast, just click on the link below and you should be able to find it. So yeah, if you want to review, download, subscribe, it all helps to kind of bump us up a little bit.
That's right. And also just a reminder, we did do a schedule change. It is now officially Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Yes. So I think that's it for the housekeeping, huh?
Yep. Oh, it looks like Alan. Let's say hi. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Alan, how's it going? All right. So I've got a special guest today, like I mentioned, and many of you already know him. He's got a huge podcast out there called Seller Sessions. And as you know, Seller Sessions, the host, Danny McMullen. Why did I say Mullen? Danny McMillan. Anyways, you know what, Danny? When I get to talk to you, you're off right now, but I keep messing that up. I did it on the last podcast as well. But anyway, Danny and I've got a really interesting topic today. So there's so many times online sellers find themselves just feeling drained, even depressed. And we'll be diving deep into how to fix the problem and the importance of saying no, especially to what we're going to be calling these energy vampires. So if you have any questions or comments, just throw them over in the comment area. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a cup of coffee and enjoy the show.
All right. Enjoy, everyone.
So now, Danny, how are you, sir?
I'm good. It's very hot here in the UK for a change. And it's just my office or office stroke studio. It's blistering hot. So all good. The new aircon's coming tomorrow. At the moment, I've got this small one and it's just blowing hot air, but it's all good. I've been looking forward to doing this with you, and congratulations on your launch.
Hey, thanks a lot. And you know, what a great guest to have for the first, you know, the official launch.
Thank you.
So I get to switch roles a little bit. I'd like to know a little bit about you now. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Yeah. So my name's Danny McMillan. I'm the host of Seller Sessions, the podcast. Also run Seller Sessions Live, the event. We also have the Seller Power Awards and Branded by Women. I have an agency called Databrill, which looks after 7-8-figure sellers with my partner, Ellis Whitehead, Dr. Ellis Whitehead, and also an Amazon seller.
Oh, fantastic. So we're talking about something different today, probably something most people haven't even thought of. But when you told me about this, I thought we had to jump all over it. So why don't we just get into that and, you know, tell everybody about, the topic that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So I think what happens is entrepreneurs, one of the things is that we, you know, time is a very limited resource. So, but what we do as entrepreneurs, we don't treat it like we manage our money. We don't manage our time. We're quite frivolous with it. So, But the thing is, where you put your energy is really, really important. So an average person, say, sleeps, say, 8 hours a day. You've got the daily routines like showering, eating and stuff. So that takes you up to 11, 12. So basically, before you've done anything else, you've just given up half your life. And the biggest problem I think people face is when they say yes to everything, and that drains them more, they become scattered, the energies become more scattered as well. And I think what people miss is a lot of your energies is not just that dialed, that kind of battery life that drains down on a daily basis and then replenishes the next day. Is you've got to look at where does that energy draw from? And that energy can either be plus or minus. So that could be your customers, your friends, and your family will either take or add to your energy. So obviously you want to spend as much time around relationships that lift that energy, so it gives you more energy. So if we take it like the battery goes up instead of being drained. So what I'd like to do is kind of break these into various different groups. There's so many groups here, but I won't go into absolute graphic detail. But so with most of the stuff coming from your energy comes from all of these relationships, right? So you've got to think is like, how do these people make you feel? You've got to take like real stock of it. You know, it's about having really good network of relationships in and around you, right? So because where you don't want to be is on that side where, you know, they say misery loves company. And then before you know it, you know, if your battery is at 10 and you speak to that, the downer kind of person whose glass is half empty, and that's in your morning, that starts to drain that right down. And so unfortunately, you can only help so far with certain people, certain things and everything else. People have to be able to do that themselves. But I think we all struggle because like when you break it down, I'll give an example here. I've got a list here. Your parents, your spouse, children, extended family, close friends, your neighbors, your extended friends, work colleagues, business partners, customers, competition, industry peer groups, and of course, social media. So if you think you won't be cross-referencing with a lot of these on a daily basis, but there's a chunk there that you will do, and these are all going to have an impact on your life, your time, and how you feel and your well-being. So ultimately, it's about having the best of all these worlds and put them all in together.
You know, have you ever heard of Larry Broughton?
No, I haven't.
Oh man, this guy's brilliant. So he owns a chain of boutique hotels. He's was a former Green Beret. He's really a serial entrepreneur. Anyways, he kind of sums up what you're saying is you have your 5 minute friends, your five-minute, five-day, and five-year friends. And the five-minute friends are kind of like those energy drainers. Those are the ones that you meet in the driveway. You say, hey, how's it going? You know, just, you know, small chat. And then you're off. You go to your next group. And the people that you really want to concentrate on are the people that are your five-year, you know, the five-year friends. The people that are positive. They're similar to you. One of the things that I've done early on, because I've had these vampires throughout my career, and I got stuck with it.
Why? Because you're an empath. We'll get into that later. The reason you attract them because you're an empath.
Interesting. But you're right. I seem to attract these types of people. But until I learned how to fire my clients and how to fire my friends, you know, I wasn't able to get out of it. So I'm doing better at it, but you're right. Like I do get stuck with these types of people in my life. But just recently I had somebody that just kept kicking me, nothing could be right, even though we were doing a great job. And then you have to look and just say, you know, even with my team, like we got to get rid of this person. I don't care what they're bringing us. We've got to let them go.
Yes. No, I agree. So shall I run through some of these? I won't go through all of them, but I just want to give, and I think the best way, like this isn't any relationship advice or anything like this. This is just from my experiences, and what you do is you look into your own experiences and then you can reflect off that. So starting with parents, right? So we're very close to home. you can't control who your parents are. Some people have amazing relationships with their parents, and some people have indifferent, and some people don't, and they're estranged and stuff like that. I mean, I have a relationship with my mum, but my father passed away last year. I didn't have a relationship with him. I met him when I was about 12, a few times, 13, and then again when I was 19, and then I got a phone call last year to say it basically had passed away. But the benefit or the upside of what happened there is that I end up meeting the other side of the family that I hadn't really had relationships with, and we've grown a bond. So that there's a real positive that came out of that. And so people have difficulties with their parents and the way they feel obliged in some cases to do things for them, even, you know, because at the end of the day, you get one mum, you get one dad, etc. So it makes it difficult for people to make decisions or are able to set some level of boundaries with a level of kindness and compassion involved, but it's stuff that needs to be worked on if it plays a role in how it's going to, you know, affect your life and your day-to-day well-being. At the end of the day, that's that vacuum around you is where you need to make sure that it is right for you. I mean, to give you an example, like we move on to our spouses, right? Like my wife, I've been with my wife 25 years, but we had our rough times when we lost our children and two of our children a few years ago. We end up going to marriage guidance for a period of time. And it was the best thing that we ever did because we unpacked everything there. And I can tell you now, when we separated, you know, you're trying to get work done if you're going through that. I've never been divorced or anything like that, but ask people that have been divorced, you know, that's like a 2 year period generally for the grieving process for people to recover. But the point I'm trying to get to is like, how do you maintain these relationships? How do you build on those? If you've been in a long-term relationship, like me and my wife, it comes down to the constant communication. And even though it's love, it's still like business as well, because it still needs to be taken care of at all times. And you need to be on the same path in terms of communication. Because I see a lot of entrepreneurs burn themselves out by launching businesses and they lack paying attention to their family. So then far, they will lose that relationship, and that might become a pattern for them. But so there's a kind of a situation there where you can be constantly having an issue with drain, especially if you've got children involved and you can't see your kids and things like that. That plays a massive role on the weight on people's shoulders. And that's not stuff, if you can avoid that stuff, great. But these have big impacts before, again, we open the doors of business.
So just quickly, yep. A shout out to Paul Harvey and also to Tiffany. But Tiffany's got a question.
Yes.
All right. So she says, I'm an empath too.
Yeah.
How can we avoid attracting these people?
I
like to know that too.
I'm going to go into detail exactly what it is. Very simple. It's about setting boundaries, but you need to recognize these signs. So I'll give my interpretation. This is not medical advice. I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. But it's just from experiences that I had myself where I go, boom, that's where the barrier is coming. But I'll come to that for you, Tiff, in a moment. Again, we've got here, got children, extended family, close friends, neighbors. People dispute with their neighbors and they don't realize the toll that it has on them. We had a dispute with our neighbor. There was a developer who bought next door. Because of my background and running a construction business before and dealing with big contractors, I kind of knew what I was dealing with. But I've seen people go to pieces by living next door to people. And it's just like it puts so much pressure on their marriages, themselves, and everything else. They don't know how to handle it. I mean, the way I dealt with it is just I got my legal guy on it and made it stop, and I confronted the person and it was job done. But I didn't then take that home with me constantly. It was dealt with there and then. But I've seen how much that can be a complete drain on people and their resources, because they're scared to say, go and get a legal letter to protect themselves. So to give you a quick example, in the UK, we have a thing called a party wall agreement. if you're going to start pulling out chimney trests on someone's wall, and you're the other side, by law, they have to have a party wall agreement. This builder didn't want to do that. He wanted to cut corners. I'm looking to sell the property to move where I live now. And I knew, like, prevention rather than the cure, and I wouldn't let it get done, and I blocked that legally. But it didn't, like, consume me. Like, it was a small period, dealt with it, passed it on. And that's another thing that people should have in business as well, is that they should have that mechanism where they need to step back. It's the same with negotiations on contracts and stuff. Sometimes in a tough negotiation, especially if someone's selling their business, it's so personal there. Having an intermediary there to take care of that allows you to step back and make informed decisions.
Well, I think one of the things that I've learned over the time, especially you're talking about legal, it's you can go and you can fight everybody, but you really have to know when and where to spend your money or your time when you're doing that, because it's just not that important.
Yeah, exactly. I don't go around, as I said, like, I've got a guy on staff. I tell you where it came from, the reason why, and I'll give you, explain why I've got a legal guy that I use all the time, not just for terms and conditions, for websites and stuff like that. I was in the, a few years ago, I was running a construction business. Now, when you work with these big contractors, right, they have a game. It's called Break the Contractor. What that means is they try and get small contractors in, and then they delay the net term. So it could be 30 days, 45, 60, 90, and slowly but surely they stop paying these people over time. The small businesses go bust because they can't pay for the time and the materials. And then what happens is, where the break the contractor thing comes in, where they fold, these contractors would have done a lot of the work. And then what they do is the contractor then brings in someone at the end. So there's a big budget left because they haven't spent the money that they should have paid these people, okay? And then what happens there is that they will get a bonus because they brought it in under budget. Now, that's a terrible way of treating people and businesses. And so what we did is that we had a legal guy that would just literally send out letters 2 or 3 times a year. The first time, you're not sleeping at night. But after a while, you realize it's the nature of the business, and they're the tools and mechanics that you got in place. And then you start to put preventions in place to work with those kind of people where you can. So we got towards the end of the process with that business is that we kind of avoided most of the bigger contracts because it wasn't worth the headache.
Yeah, that's the thing. Wasn't worth the headache.
Yes.
So you, yeah.
The money wasn't worth it. That's the thing. And I think people get locked in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen this, especially this one situation I had where it was an employee, actually, Danny. Listen to this one. All right. Yeah. So I had this employee. I was setting off to go on a first vacation I had in about 2 years. The guy behind my back, I know we're just kind of going off topic here, but behind my back goes and he just approached every one of my clients. He was my sales manager. He was making 6 figures, so he's making a good salary. Plus, he was getting an override. Decided the day that I left to go on my holiday that he was going to go and reach out to everybody. And it just happened just before checking my email, I saw something bounce back to our server. And so anyways, what a way to start off. So the guy ended up taking a bunch of our clients. And at the end of the day, I ended up going to the lawyer's office. And this would have been a biggie. But he said, you know, basically, are you ready to lose about $125,000 before you can even get started? And, you know, at the end of the day, I could be really pissed. I could be really negative. But it would be a 6 month to a year long struggle of being absolutely negative. It would eat me up. And so something like that, you just have to let go. And that can go all the way down to the smaller problems as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally. Kicking through a few more of these on the list, you know, picking the right business partners is really important. Customers. Okay, let's look at two things. Let's give a reference to an Amazon customer, and then we can reference to a service-based business. Right. So we have customers on Amazon. You see it quite a lot. A lot of sellers who have been around the block for a while, you know, they know this now. But you'd be surprised how bent out of shape people get when they get a negative review. Furious, complaining, and wants to do this. And I've seen people, especially with Merchant Fulfilled, etc., they're almost provoking the customer. It's like, if you think about the psychology of the customer, if they've wrote a snotty email to you, like a message or a bad review or whatever it may be, the worst thing you can do is throw fuel on the fire, because that's what they're looking for, right? That is the absolutely worst thing you can do. Kill them with kindness. Don't give an F. Sorry, because I don't want you to get barred on. I know I swear on my podcast, but I don't. It's like, don't worry about it. Move on. They leave a bad review. They do that. Have a Coke and a smile. Move on. Because that shit will eat you up all day long. And you're thinking about how I'm going to get them back. And people are going to be people. They are going to do that. And you can't let these things affect you. Because all that's going to do is mess with the equilibrium of your day. You know how difficult it is to get remove reviews on Amazon. It's a tough. I mean, I've got a couple of emails that are framed from the reviews I've removed or had removed directly from the community, because it's just like a depends on who's up on the day and who's willing to do that. But I see that people get really bent up with that, and there's no point. There's literally like you need to move on. You need to have a strategy in place to get more reviews, or if it is your fault, you look at the product and you fix the product. But ultimately, people will vent, and sometimes they're writing these reviews because they're just having a really bad day, and you are their target for that day, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you can easily give them options.
Yes.
So automatic refund. That's a no-brainer. Automatic refund. And for me, I sell one of my products would be soap. So maybe they just didn't like the scent. Yeah. Here, we'll send you another bar. What would you like? And you never know. They might go from a 1-star to a 3-star. They might keep it at a 1-star. But at least you did everything that you could to bring it up.
Yeah, totally. And then customers. I think you've got to look at as well is that with our agency, we're selective in terms of who we bring on. And I think there's a misgiving out there that people think that they're interviewing just you, like they'll come to you, they're interviewing you, carrot and stick, you'll get their work if you meet these certain requirements, which is right, you need to do your research and everything else. But as an agency, you've also got to look, okay, is this person, can you do this work for that person? Are their demands reasonable? If not, you need to explain that to them. You need to break that down to them. And I think what happens is with business is people are quickly to sign up their customers and then they have a nightmare down the line. And if you end up with a customer that's unhappy or just a customer that you can never please, for instance, they've got goals that are not realistic. If you don't spot that in the beginning, that's going to have tremendous impact on your team. Who's going to want to sit on the client call? No one. Who's going to want to try and explain to this client why this hasn't worked, that hasn't worked? And so it's really important is that when you get to a stage, don't take the short money off the table. Look at playing the long game and interviewing your customers and look for all those things and whether they're a fit. I call it a dance partner. It's key to get the right dance partner or you will upset the apple cart.
So what are some of the red flags?
What are some of the red flags? I think for me, some of the red flags is when someone comes to you and they're saying, you know, the last person's terrible and they're on their fifth agency, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. Because I think what you need to do there, you need to reflect and say, why am I at five agencies? What am I doing? Is it my expectations or do I have an extremely poor luck which just doesn't have any variables at five agencies in 2 years, right? So you'll find is that maybe the key thing here is that maybe they picked the cheapest one. I don't know. There are so many different variables when it comes to the agency stuff. So my thing is the red flags is what are their expectations? So let's just say they come to you and go, okay, I'm with this agency now, but I want my ACoS to be 15%. Like you're going to fix it at that. And I think what people forget, and I've explained this to other agencies when we've had conversations, right? When you run a PPC agency, on a micro level, you've got all the different variables on the campaigns, right? So you get choice there, but you don't get to choose the brand name. You don't get to choose the products. You don't get to choose the category. You don't get to choose their margin. You don't get to choose the price point. You don't get to choose if they've got 3.5 stars. So I'm not putting that back on the customer, but what I'm saying is that when you look at what what you do, what mechanics you do have control of, and where you can help, is that the best thing I found that you can do is you need to work out whether you can do anything for this client. Is that client going to be, can you help grow their account and can you show them how it can grow? Or is there only a couple of quick wins? Like, for instance, when we do a discovery call, we'll do best and worst keywords. We'll show people exactly what it is. They can go off and save money that way. So we look for clients that are looking to work on their business in other areas and hand off the PPC. And so they're looking for a trusted source to do that. There are some cases where, and we don't always take them on, is that it's maintenance. Maybe they're top of market. Maybe their accounts really managed really well, but they just want to get their time back. But I think the key thing is how they are with you and you talk to them. Do you have a connection with this person? Because your job is to help their business as much as possible. And if you don't have a connection, it's going to be very hard to work your ass off from to take care of them.
Yeah, for our team, it's managing expectations. So Yes. If there's issues that come up, it's usually due to that. Yeah. But one thing that I hate and we won't tolerate is if a customer all of a sudden decides to go off on one of our project managers, that's when the relationship stops.
Yeah.
So
Danny. Go.
I was going to say, I do want to go back to partnerships.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. How do you find the right partner? How do you know when you're in for trouble? Or what, again, going back to red flags.
Okay, so it really does vary. I've been lucky on the partner front. I've not had a real issue, which I want to get into personality disorders in a bit. I haven't really had an issue on the partner side. I've had it where I've worked under tyrants, basically, one in the music industry, one in the tech world, and they can be very, very damaging. But I think with business partners, it's organic. I think you get to know them. It's a slow pace. You understand who they are. You learn about each other's history, because at the end of the day, business is like a marriage as well. You know, you've got to make it work. And if you spend a lot of time with someone, you need to be able to get on with them. So it's trying to understand their back history. You can normally tell a lot by someone by what went on prior to them. The tough one is when you're dealing with, for a better word of it, just habitual liars, basically, but you don't know. But I think what I want to talk about as well is that when it comes to personality disorders and stuff like that and dealing with people like that, is that you generally will get a gut feel, but you've got to make sure you pay attention to what your gut is saying. So there's no hard and fast rule with business partners. I think with me and Ellis, it was very organic. I was over speaking in Germany. We hung out for a week with each other. We got on tremendously well all week. And we then spent 6 months building a relationship, and 3 years down the line, and touch wood, it's never happened, but we've never had a disagreement. We've always found the middle ground for everything. You know, it's like very defined, like, that's what you do, this is what I do, and we'll help each other, and then we advise each other, oh, what about this, and very thoughtful and taking on each other's considerations. And I think that's really key for a partnership, is there's a balance. Like friendships and business partnerships isn't about power, it's about balance. It's about what serving the needs of each other, basically, in that relationship.
So let's get back to the empath side. I'm curious about this. So going back to Tiffany's question, so how to avoid attracting them?
Right. So let's just start with, let's go into a couple of personality disorders. This is not me spouting the DSM-5 or anything, and I'm not qualified for this. This is just learnings, experience, and stuff like that. So if we take into consideration, you got, say, two main ones, is like your overt and your covert narcissist that people have to deal with. You've got, it's known as the NDPs, and then you've got borderlines, and there's all sorts of stuff goes on, right? The danger with dealing with people like that is it only leads to endless gaslighting, word salad, blame shifting, deception, lack of accountability. A lot of them conveniently forget their behavior. Oh, I don't remember. They'll do something and then don't remember. And then there's projection as well. Now, the biggest one that you have to deal with is the coverts. They're very hard to spot, but they're masters at playing the victim, right? So every situation is everyone else's fault. And they'll use people's empathy as manipulation for their pity, right? So this is a never-ending game of circular conversations never get resolved. They're also, in the main, you know, we're generalizing, in the main, they're hypersensitive to perceived criticism, as this calls what called a narc injury, because it's about the false self. So a narcissist has to have a false self because they see in themselves like a higher power, higher God, better than everyone else, and they can't face their imperfections. So what they do is they create a false self. And so what they struggle with, and you may not know, is that is when they've got the false self, if they're reminded of their true self, if they're reminded of accountability and they're not perfect and stuff like that, this can cause a narc industry. And so this can go into sulking, or if the other end of this spectrum, they're malicious. We don't get it really in the business world, but you've got malignant narcissists as well who can be very, very destructive, like physically. Whereas what the difference, I suppose, is that with narcissists, like overt ones, you kind of see them coming. You know they are. They're there to descend, like to rise up the dominance hierarchy. I would say what happens with the covert narcissist, what they do is because they're covert, what they're doing is they're looking up the hierarchy. They don't like it because really that's where they want to be, but so their grandiosity is kind of hidden away, and then it only comes out in certain quarters because it comes down to shame. And so with the shame is that they don't want people to know who they truly are. So they're normally very, very difficult to spot. Now, the thing is with narcs is that they'll run for a system. Like it depends on the type of relationship that you have. But you've got some people call it the honeymoon period. Some people call it the charm period. Some people call it ideation. But there's a normal another process called devaluation and discard. So if you're not aware of their manipulation and you're going through an ideation, devaluation and back forth these cycles, there's a thing called a Hoover. And the Hoover is where they'll be nice to again in that cycle to draw you back in, but then they'll devaluate and then maybe discard again. So this is a constant realm because what they're doing is called narcissistic supply. And what narcissistic supply is where they need the adoration or whatever. And in some cases, it can be on a negative side of things because ultimately their regulation is on feelings and their feelings are regulated by those around them. So they may treat people well, they may treat them bad, and they'll go through this whole situation. So you have to be a bit careful. And the key people that they would target if they can get their hands on them is empaths, because the traits of an empath, you know, they're very helpful, considerate and stuff like that. These are perfect as the opposites to what the narcissistic person will need, especially if you look into the covert end of things and they are playing the victim, they're going to play on your emotions. So that can be working out to be quite destructive. If anyone understands what gaslighting and stuff is, go and have a look it up and read up about it. Because it's interesting to you to have this as a defense mechanism. So going back to Tiff, like I had her on my show a little while ago, and she does is she runs a mile from them. And the thing is, in business, you can't, in life, you can't always run from them. But if you can spot the signs, it's how you set the barriers. And so you need to be able to set the barriers or boundaries. And so what you would do is you take a look at things in the account. You want to look at your previous conversations or recurring interactions and like, are these relationships balanced? Are they constantly on the take? Does this include emotional favors, money, access to network people and stuff like that? Then you've got to look at with a narcissist, they're devoid of empathy in most cases. I think it depends if like borderlines are slightly different. I'm really out of my sphere in terms of the labeling, but you can normally spot where the lack of empathy there. So like you might have someone who's always taken off you and then almost snoring when you want to tell them something that's going on in your life, and they're just not interested. They look away, they jump on their phone and stuff like that. So, or they're very busy when you need them for something, right? Mm-hmm. So your true sense of relationships becomes balanced. You look after each other, and you know, but ultimately what it comes down to is setting boundaries. And the quicker you can identify them is the quicker you can set the boundary. Don't fall for the charm and everything else. Say, thank you, that's wonderful. And, you know, if you do set boundaries, then they are going to get upset because obviously they're going to lose control of the situation because it's about power and everything else and all that nonsense. So you've got to look at it as, why, what are these people about? Do you understand them? You know, knowing they've got no empathy, a lot of them are, well, all narcs are pretty much pathological liars as well. And you just got to kind of look at their history. Like a lot of them will go through friend cycles or cycles of humans for over a course of maybe a year. That group could change over a period of time because they've worked through the group. People realize what they are. They set the boundary. That person's ashamed. Then they move on. Not always the case. Like with overts, or grandiose narcissists, they don't really care. At the end of the day, they're a lot more regulated in terms of their feelings and know what they want. So it becomes less of a struggle. And some of them will admit to you and just, they don't care. They don't care.
So that's when you should pack up and run.
Well, the thing is, sometimes you can't just pack up and run, but it's, again, just goes back to set boundaries. Like in some cases, there's a couple of things that people would do is that if they're dealing with, they know that they're dealing with, or they feel they know they're dealing with a narcissist, right? The thing is, you can't just like, everyone has element of narcissistic traits, right? So pride is a narcissistic trait. But if you've got someone doing word salad, gaslighting, and all forms of manipulation, lying, and all that kind of stuff, then you've got to start to think, okay, this is a problem. Do you want these kind of people around you? And sometimes you just go no contact, and sometimes people use what's called grey rock. So they're looking for regulation of narcissistic supply, whether that's going to be whether it's praise or they're fishing, there's a thing called baiting as well, where they're fishing for an argument, but the thing in between is being indifferent. There's nothing worse from a narcissist to be ignored or to be indifferent with them. So instead of reacting to what they're doing, whether that's negative or positive, because it doesn't matter as long as they get their narcissistic supply, they can have their fun with it, laugh about it, move on to the next person or next to part of the supply chain, because it's a constant evolving thing that they need to regulate themselves on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think that takes some skill. So, yeah. You know, being able to set those boundaries, because yeah. I just know from my end, it's really hard to go out there and, okay, you identify something. What's the first thing I say is, you know, let's give this guy another chance, or yeah. You know, you don't want to be a jerk. And I guess sometimes you just have to, with these boundaries, I mean, you've got to lay them down. Like when we fire, I hate saying fire, I'll use a different term. But anyways, when we let go of a client because they're being jerks, yeah. You know, it does affect you. So, yeah. You know, it affects you emotionally. So, and not only, so now that we're looking at this, we're talking about these energy suckers, right? These vampires yeah. We were talking about. So yeah. They really do, even if you decide to put up the boundaries, they're still sucking your energy one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, at least that's what I find.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think if you know and understand, you know, I always say to people, like, there's a book out there called 48 Laws of Power. I've not read it, but I've read Dave's synopsis, and it's like, mm-hmm. It is literally a handbook for narcissists. So what I would say to people is read these books and gather this information and understand it as a defense mechanism, right? Because at the end of the day, if you put it in perspective, if someone's got a disorder like that, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it, but you can't play their game. Because if you're an empath and you're not ruthless and a habitual liar and gaslighting everyone, then the rules of engagement is different. So the best thing you can do pretty much is block them. I mean, in some cases, I've got a friend who's had problems, you know, just get legal involved and document it and then go no contact. You know, there's a difference, like whatever happens if you go no contact with a person like that, they're going to be extremely upset because they can't carry on playing the games, right? So there's other things out there where they'll smear you. They have what's called flying monkeys, where they have a group of people around them to say things and come back, and you know. But then you've got to be strong enough in yourself and know yourself. Does that make sense? But I think what happens in the very beginning, if you're knowledged up and you spot this, that doesn't really start. As I said, covert's are harder to spot. But if you have no knowledge of this, like I know there's loads of people out there, or we'll play back on the listening, will be out there and they go, yeah, that's really weird. That happened. Don't understand why that. And there's all these little odd things. And it really, really does come down to your gut. You know with your gut whether something's right or not, but it's whether you go with your gut. And so you don't know, you don't need to know the words and the titles and the games and stuff, but you know when something's not right. And so it's about pulling back from that and how you treat that. Because ultimately, they're saying that it's like 1 in 10 people have some level of personality disorder. And obviously, these are on a spectrum, so they can go really bad to mild and stuff. So I think it's really important just to understand some of the basics. And if you are an empath and you want to carry on being the way you are and you want to help people and do things like that, but you want to avoid yourself being around people like that, is go and get knowledged up, understand it, and then when you spot that, you can just take a step back. You don't have to get involved. You don't have to comment. You don't have to call them out or anything. You just have to have an understanding of, that doesn't make sense, nor does that, nor does that, nor does that. Put that together in the spectrum. Okay, time to take a step back.
Yeah. Any good books you could recommend?
Let's have a look. I see I've got some on my phone.
And in the meantime, hey, Michelle, haven't seen you in a while.
So you've got Dark Psychology Secrets, and there's one called, and that's by Diana Brain, and then you've got Manipulation Secrets, 4 books in 1. It covers NLP and all that kind of stuff, the dark side of dealing with that. So be careful if you're at a conference and someone taps you on the shoulder. So that's like 4 books in 1. There's another one by Mark Brain, which is Manipulation and the Persuasion Code.
Okay, and we'll get those in the links, or we'll put those links in the.
If you want to look at, like YouTube, there's two sides to YouTube, right? There's the more qualified end, I would call it, in terms of what's going on out there. But then there's a lot of YouTube channels where, unfortunately, people have been affected by narcissism, so they're like more like co-defendants. They realise what's happened, and they're like telling their story. But if there's a few places out there. There's a guy called who's a psychologist. Is Richard Grannan. I'm going to have him on the show soon. I think he had an issue with a couple of narcissists, and he learned in that world and become a psychologist. And he's obviously helping people who are having to deal with that, because it can get on a more of a drastic level. Then you've actually got two of them out there. There's Sam Vaknin. He's actually a narcissist. He's I think he said he's a malignant narcissist. I don't want to call him names, but he has a channel explaining from a narcissist point of view, which is a very rare thing. And then there's one called Knowing the Narcissist. This guy hides behind it. He's got kind of a bit of a creepy voice. What was his name? I think his name is H.G. Tudor. And so when you'll go there, put some search terms in, look at gaslighting, look at word salad, What else is there to give an example? Word salad, blame shifting, projection. Look into some of those, no contact, grey rock and things like that, and just get a general idea. You don't have to go and get a degree in it, but what it will do is help you navigate in life through the business world of where to step. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to give Kelsey a lot of homework. Yeah. All right, so as an Amazon seller, I know we've already touched on a couple of these things. So biggest energy vampires, affecting Amazon sellers, and how can you avoid them?
Okay, there's another one that we've missed off as well. Let's talk social media and competition. Okay, let me give you an example. Now I've given you a bit of a backstory. When you've got a black hatter trying to take you out of the game, putting 5,000 or 1,000 negative reviews and killing your listing, what does that say to you?
When you first see it?
What does it say to you? Effectively, what are you dealing with? You're dealing with someone who will win at all cost, has no empathy, right? Yeah. And they seek and destroy. They're looking to take you out the game and no remorse
at
no cost. So when you're in a category and you're dealing with that, but you're an empath, what are you going to do? Are you going to go and seek and destroy? Are you going to give up your quality traits to be like that?
No.
So that's another thing that where people get drained, because they go and launch in a category, and then they're attacked by, effectively, you could call it covert narcissism, because there's that grandiosity thing there. They're attacking, they've got no remorse, and obviously it's done to a point where they don't want to get caught for doing it, but they want to win at all costs. Are you willing to play that game? If not, you've got to start selling other products, because either you play that game, and the other thing with narcissists is sometimes they don't know they're going up against, because they might go up against the greater who will then take them out the game, But it really does come down to is like that's another thing that's going to take and absorb you. Is the best thing to do in those cases is, because you can't do anything about it, Amazon's not going to do anything about it, is you walk away. You go into another category. You avoid that.
So you just cut bait.
Yeah. You've got to, I think. Because otherwise, imagine you've got a really good business and you get taken out by blackouts overnight and you're not that way inclined. What are you going to do? If you're not willing to go back and fight them, if you've got no proof, step away. That's all you can do, as hard as it is. The other thing I wanted to point out is social media. It's so dangerous that even with Amazon said, look, we're on Facebook now. I've just done my show earlier on. I put in my time on Facebook. But we do know that with Facebook, generally, there seems to be a higher rate of depression from people dependent on the amount of time that they spend on Facebook. Like the longer they spend on Facebook, the more likely they're going to be depressed over someone who isn't. The other thing is getting involved with battles on Facebook, not just with trolls, but like reacting to stuff, like, and then having like this 20 comment thread and like screwing up your day. It's like, just walk past it. You just like, you see it, leave it. You don't need to get involved. And I think I've seen people get like almost hyperventilating because they're so angry because of the responses they've got. And it's like, then don't do it. Because that will eat you up as well. And that can happen in some of the Facebook groups. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I have seen it. And I have been part of those 20 thread comments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But where did it get you?
Nowhere.
Got you nowhere. And the thing is, it's hard because you've got to step away. But me and you, I've had people troll me. I had one guy, right? I just delete block. But I had one guy who had a rant at me, but in his rant, he turned around and said, I was on LinkedIn and I listened to your podcast and da 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 da. And so I decided to leave LinkedIn and come over onto YouTube and hide behind this channel to vent because I don't have a big enough pair of balls to effectively do that on the LinkedIn channel because you'd be embarrassed of your behavior, one, and two, you don't want to say it to my face, but you're willing to do it covertly. So again, with stuff like that, what can you do? It's like you can take it on board or you can just delete it. If there's truth in it, you read into it and you go, okay, make adjustments. But if there isn't and it's just a rant, how can you take someone seriously in that situation? Do you know what I normally do when things kick off? I phone them on Facebook. If they're like not, you know, if it's on Facebook, I'll ring them through Messenger and then I'll have a chat with them. And I'm like, come on, let's break bread. If you've got an issue with me, just talk about it. There's no need to do like a 30 round pro. Stephen right. here, look, Danny, troll me. Behave yourself. Yeah. But it doesn't, does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to get into those wars because it just comes down to ego in the end, doesn't it? And it's like, you feel righteous to respond and like, then you've got to win, but then you could also let it go.
Right. Yeah. What I'll do in those types of situations now is I will reach out and try to logically figure out where they're coming from and ask, because maybe I am doing something wrong or right.
Yeah.
And then if it's a crazy answer, that's where I cut it off. I'm not going to be responding any further, but I have met really great people because I did reach out and go, hey, I don't understand why you said this.
Exactly. And the thing is, you are going to say things. If you just generally open with people, you are going to say things, and then sometimes you don't always understand the context of it. Like, I don't sit there and go, oh, I'm going to intentionally upset people, but they might say something where people may take the wrong, or they may have got the right end of it. I don't know, maybe someone does get upset because you may pick and choose customers. I'm only picking and choosing customers I want to work with because I look at long-term, not short-term. I'm not after customers' money. I'm after results for them and build a long-term relationship. That's why I do it. You know, I never look at the quick money on anything.
So are there any apps or software that you can use to kind of streamline this? Like if somebody's giving you negative comments, that it just blocks it off or...
Not I can think of. I mean, we've had them on StreamYard. You just block them where you can block them. You know,
right.
We've had outlandish comments and behavior. But again, it's like if someone's going to hide behind something and say that, how much should you let it affect you? Do you see what I mean? If they can't bring themselves to show their face whilst doing it, it's cowardice, you know?
I can agree. You know, it's 100% with you.
So
it's trying not to have it affect me, especially if you have, like I said, I'll give it that one response.
Yeah.
It still affects me. But, you know, once you notice that there are vampire trolls out there, what are the benefits of just cutting these guys off? So let's go back to that.
Okay. So if you're dealing with someone who's that way, think about not just the benefits, think about what they do. If they're a pathological liar, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're not got your interest at heart, if they are, you know, using forms of manipulating, gaslighting, you know, saying, no, you're too sensitive, or I don't remember that. Oh, that wasn't me. I don't know what you're talking about when it's just happened like 5 minutes ago.
Mm.
Then why would you want that around you? And so you can set boundaries, but then the boundaries might breach in some cases. And then in worst case scenarios, you have to block them. You just block them, all channels, phone, everything. Just shut down, move on. That won't obviously make them happy. But the whole point is that you never invited someone around you to be that way. Do you know what I mean? Just general healthy people are not that way.
You mentioned a term, I never heard of it before, but flying monkeys.
Yes.
And I am very fearful. That's
the Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
I'm fearful of those flying monkeys because you try to take the high road and do something. And I've seen it happen. I've had it happen. All of a sudden, this guy's friends come in and just slaughter you.
Yeah.
For me, I don't want to respond back to idiots.
Yeah.
What do you do about something like that?
Ask them to have a think about what they're saying and then report back in 7 months when the narcs burnt through that relationship as well.
Interesting.
Because it's cycles, right? So, because the thing is, how long can you keep a mask on for? At some point, the mask slips.
Right.
So what happens is short term, you deal with that, and then it all blows up. And then what do? At some point, they have to show their true colors to those people as well. And then they have to come back, not apologize, but they'll come back maybe later and feel a bit embarrassed about the situation. So, you know, such and such. I was maybe a little bit overzealous there. Yeah.
Interesting. So, yeah. So don't fear the flying monkeys.
Well, the only other thing that you do is like you just document everything and you give it to your lawyer. Simple as that. Because you just, if you've got everything documented, then you can go boom. And that's slander. And then at the end of the day, you've got to take care of you. Like you are not asked for that. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the last measurement. But if someone's making stuff up about you and being unruly, then what do? You have to protect yourself. Right. But ideally, like, because you didn't invite them in, because that's like narcissists are predators. They prey on you. Right. So they're looking for vulnerabilities and stuff like that. And often they'll find them within empaths.
So Karyos says direct communication, boundaries, never discredit your instinct.
Exactly. Yeah. He's put that down the whole show, and he's put that down in one sentence.
Yep. Perfect. All right. So we're coming up to the hour here.
Yes.
And if you can tell the audience one thing, one takeaway from this episode, what would it be?
One thing I would say is just set boundaries for everything and everyone is be brave, set boundaries.
I think that's what we'll title this, setting boundaries. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, Danny. Well, it's the end of the show. I really appreciate you coming on. It's our first one. It'll be interesting to look back a year from now. Hopefully I can get up to the 500 episodes you're up at.
You'll get there, mate. You will get there. Don't worry.
So, all right. So I hope everyone enjoyed the Facebook Live today. We will be posting the whole thing and along with a bunch of shorter clips on Norm Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy. Please check out the normferrar.com's website. Jesus, sounds like I'm narcissistic. Danny, thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You've got the best podcast out there. If you don't know the podcast, you got to check it out, Seller Sessions.
Thank you. Right. And if you don't mind, I'll republish this to my audience as well.
Do I mind? Absolutely not.
I'm happy to support you, mate.
That's great.
You're a great person.
So. Hey, thank you. So stay tuned this Wednesday. We're going to be having Chris Daigle on, and we're going to be talking about accelerated scaling. So thanks again for watching, and enjoy the rest of your day. Lunch with the